From NPR and WBUR, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now, and we're going to be digging into all aspects of the election results today, starting this hour with the big picture. Rick Klein is political director with ABC News. He's with us now. Rick, as we have heard all morning long and all night last night, a big night for Republicans. What do you think voters were saying?
Voters were angry, and they also had a deep-seated anxiety about where they stood. And I think we saw the wave splash throughout races, governor's races, Senate races in particular, House races. And it was indiscriminate, except that it hit Democrats disproportionately, mostly because they had more seats. But I think there was just a generalized anxiety about the state of the country, and I think the Democrats took the brunt of it.
Did that surprise you, the results, the fact that GOP was winning races that nobody thought that they would win?
The scope of it, the scale of it surprised me, and I think surprised a lot of Democrats. I think Democrats were resigned in the end to lose the Senate, but they didn't expect to lose it as big as they did. They thought they might be able to eke it out. Maybe it would force a runoff here or there. There'd be some other complicating factor. They didn't expect to see these kind of losses in the teens, in the House, and in the governor's races. Wow. When you look at the inroads that the Republicans made in holding seats in big battlegrounds like in Wisconsin and in Florida, and then in winning in places like Massachusetts, like Maryland, that is something that I don't think a lot of people saw coming. And it suggests a deeper seated frustration with the party in power than even the polls were showing up to Election Day.
Well, and by the way, Rick, Nate Silver, the pollster, writes today that the polls were skewed. He feels they were off, including his, in favor of Democrats. He cites years when it was the other way around. It was in favor of Republicans, and then it surprised everybody. But, for instance, the polls had the Democrat Mark Warner up by 9 points in Virginia, not the photo finish that it is. In Kansas, the Governor Brownback and the Senator Pat Roberts won handily. The polls did not predict that. So polls might have been off, but some analysts were saying that this is what should have happened because this is what happens in the sixth year of a presidency. And because these were states with more Republican voters, some were saying, why aren't the Republicans doing better? What do you think there?
I think this was clearly fought on Republican territory. There's no question about that. But I think if you limit the analysis to this being an away game for Democrats, you're missing a larger point because there were places that they should not have lost. There's places that should have been more hospitable to Democrats. You mentioned Virginia, where we still haven't made a projection in that race. But the fact that we're even counting votes the day afterward is shocking. No one saw that on the radar screen. People expected some of the southern states to flip. They expected maybe even a Colorado or Iowa, but of Virginia, that's a real surprise.
Yeah, but what were the voters saying? Anger, yeah, we hear that. But we've spoken to some Republican lawmakers who say they believe the voters were saying, overturn health care, stop any progress on immigration reform. What do you think?
I think any party that draws a mandate out of this is overreading what the election was. I don't think this was a judgment in favor of anyone. I think it was a judgment against incumbents, mostly incumbent Democrats. In some cases, you can make the argument for governors, but that's not the folks who are talking about immigration. They're not the folks that are talking generally about health care, trying to repeal the health care law. So I don't think anyone can draw from this a broad mandate that says this is what we want you to affirmatively do. We haven't gotten that message yet, and that's why we continue to see change after change election and then frustration that no one seems to be happy with the situation.
But you do hear people like Rand Paul saying last night, this is a rejection of President Obama's policies, and you wonder what is Mitch McConnell going to do now and how much pressure is he going to face from the right wing of his party, people like Ted Cruz, to really come out there with some red meat for the base?
A ton of pressure is the answer. He's going to have a couple of people, including Senator Paul, who are likely to run for president, Senator Cruz as well, Senator Rubio. They're going to be positioning in different ways. You saw what Senator McConnell said in accepting the win last night, talking about himself as a problem solver, not wanting to go out there in a confrontational manner. We'll see if he can stick to that, if he even wants to stick to that. The president has an opportunity to now set the tone in the traditional post-election press conference. But it is on him now to chart that new course, because I think Republicans feel just great about themselves. You're not seeing a lot of gloating. You are seeing them, though, feel like they have the will of the people at their back in some way. What they do with it, now the question.
Well, and we thought it was interesting that when you came to the questions that were on the ballot across the country, voters often passed initiatives that are part of Democratic policy, expanding background checks on guns, raising wages. What else do we have?
Marijuana.
Marijuana legalization across the country. So how do you read that?
I think Democrats have a case to make in that, that in terms of the policies being put forward, we still have the public on our side. And you look at some economic equality issues, you can still make an argument that the public's on board for generally where Democrats want to go. They either haven't done a good job communicating that, or Republicans have found a way to counter message that, or people don't care about the policies as much as they do about the people. So in either of those scenarios, it's a big problem for Democrats. It's not enough to say they like the policies. They have to like the candidates, too.
Rick, I want to talk just briefly about two candidates that the voters seem to love, that nobody was talking about it because they weren't close races, but they could have been. John Kasich in Ohio, 63% of the vote in a state that is always very split.
And by the way, he expanded Medicaid under Obamacare and still won handily.
And still won. And also Jerry Brown in California, who got who beat his opponent, Neil Kashkari, by about 17 points.
Yeah, I think the point that you can draw out of those, in both cases, you had a bit of a weaker challenger, but you're right. That is stunning, especially.
Oops. Especially, we hang on his every word. We'll bring Rick back. We're going to bring in Chris Grant while we wait for Rick to finish that thought. So we'll keep that file open. Chris Grant teaches political science at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia. Chris, are you there?
I am.
Well, let's look at the race there in Georgia. Jeremy spent some time down there. The Democrat, Michelle Nunn, gave the Republican businessman David Perdue a run for that Senate seat that was vacated by Saxby Chambliss. Perdue won. But what do you think is the takeaway here?
Well, I think a lot of folks on the Democratic side assume that if they could get 30% of the electorate to be non-white, and they actually exceed that, they get 35% of the electorate to be non-white, that they would do well. What happens in this race is that white men turn out at a higher rate than white women, even though the electorate is more women than men, and it's a skew toward folks that are over 50. 52% of the folks that voted in Georgia were over the age of 50. And so when you start looking at a white male older electorate that really came out to vote in a big way, that begins to start to explain why Georgia wasn't closer than it was.
But shouldn't that have been expected? I mean, we knew that the midterm electorate was going to be whiter and older than the presidential electorate.
And in the
right,
South,
but I don't think anybody really expected that only 5% of the electorate would be in the 18 to 24 bracket, or 5% of the electorate would be in the 25-29% bracket. Those two groups broke for Michelle Nunn, but they were really small when you looked at the over 65 and the 20% of the Georgia electorate was over 65. She did well with African-American voters, but I think where she didn't do so well is with white women. She only picked up 27% of the vote with white women, who made up 30% of the electorate. So moderates and moderate women who had been thought to be very strongly receptive to the Nunn message didn't turn out in the end, and they didn't vote for her in the end.
Well, we're reading a great piece in the Washington Post today about what went on behind the scenes as the midterms got down to the wires, how Republicans were told to make it all about President Obama, to pound the Democrats for the disastrous rollout of the health care law, the problems at the VA, undocumented children coming across the border, ISIS, Ebola. What was David Perdue doing? Did he take a page from that playbook?
Well, he did talk some about President Obama. Certainly there was a campaign, a major element of the campaign was to try to morph Michelle Nunn and Barack Obama as much as possible. But I think what this really had the effect of doing that helped Perdue quite a lot is it probably depressed turnout for younger voters, because they were the folks that had voted for Obama and now they weren't so sure and they didn't know exactly what to do. And it's hard to motivate people when you're kind of torn between someone that you voted for and you've had a strong belief in, and then there's a lot of problems coming up. So I think that worked really well there. And I think it also dissuaded moderate white women who may have thought about voting for Michelle Nunn to rethink that vote. And it appears that there's a lot of momentum going on in the last week of the election. I mean, about a week ago, Michelle Nunn looked like she was tied or maybe even a little bit ahead. And then in this last week, there really has been a dramatic shift in terms of where the momentum was going, at least if you look at the polls.
Chris Grant at Mercer University there in Macon, Georgia, talking about what was supposed to be a very tight race and turned out not to be. Rick Klein, we've got you back. What about that point?
Especially.
Yeah, well, I do want to get to that. But what about this point about how young voters just did not turn out nationwide?
a huge frustration for Democrats. It's almost like a demographic time machine where you go back in time to a slightly older and slightly less diverse, whiter electorate every time you have a midterm year. And it's a great hope of Democrats to try to change that and try to get the same Obama coalition of younger voters and minority voters to show up in a midterm year. You know President Obama was trying. You know all the Democrats in these states were trying. They just couldn't get it done. So you go back to a different generation of voters that reflects different values and different priorities.
But I want to mention one thing. We did some stories this week, Jeremy, in which analysts were pointing to polls that showed that even the millennials were maybe shifting and becoming more Republican. And you have to remember, it's an age group that changes quickly. It's fluid. It's only 19 to 29 years old. And, you know, 8 years ago, if you're 20 now, you might have been 12 and not part of the Obama boost at that time. So and people are taking a closer look at how millennials might have voted if they had turned out.
And another factor, if you're 20 now, then you've experienced economic anxiety for the entire time you would have been in the workforce. We know the underemployment rate for recent college graduates, recent high school graduates. So you've experienced this economic anxiety your entire life. So why wouldn't you be up for grabs? That's a bigger concern for Democrats. It's not just that the Obama generation may not turn out every year. It's that they could still be malleable. They could still become a Republican generation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Rick, we left people hanging with your thought earlier about Jerry Brown and John Kasich. Kasich, what were you saying?
Right. I was saying about Kasich in particular, Ohio is always a battleground. The fact that any governor could win that kind of resounding majority, you will hear John Kasich's name in 2016. You'll even hear Jerry Brown's name in 2016, which has a Back to the Future element surrounding it. But I think the records that those two governors in two big states that are high profile have built will mean that what they're doing right will be transferable, and people will want to talk about that.
And Chris Grant, again, there at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia. Oh, he's gone. Well, people are doing that to us today, I guess. They're just disappearing. Rick, any last thoughts? You got a few seconds here. Any last thoughts on last night?
It was just bigger than anyone realized. And I do think that either party that sees kind of the details of this will realize that it isn't a harsh judgment against any one party. It's just a statement of where the country is right now, which is just a country that's still in flux and still anxious.
That's Rick Klein, political director for ABC News, weighing in on last night's results. Republicans winning big, taking back the Senate, taking governor's seats, and taking, as he said, a lot of people by surprise. But as we're hearing, maybe those polls were off. Rick Klein, thank you so much.
Thank you.